I'm Philip.
And I'm Ben.
And this is Real Journeys, where we explore themes from some of our favorite films and relate them back to our own spiritual journeys. We're not going to review the movie. We assume you've already seen it. Today, we're going to do our topics a little bit differently, and I think we're going to challenge each other with some questions.
Yeah, looking forward to it. New format.
From the City of Angels, this is Real Journeys.
Stood and stared at it, marveled at its beauty, its genius. Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
The 1999 action sci-fi, hard to believe it's been over 20 years, The Matrix from the Wachowskis.
A brief synopsis, computer programmer Thomas Anderson, played by Keanu Reeves, uses his alter ego Neo to hack the internet at night looking for the truth of existence. When a mysterious set of signs leads him to Trinity, played by Carrie Ann Moss, and Morpheus, played by Lawrence Fishburne, his eyes are opened to the realization that his consciousness has been living in a complex computer program called the Matrix, designed by a sophisticated race of artificial intelligence. Neo, who Morpheus believes is the one, must save humanity from the clutches of the artificial intelligent forces, which have enslaved humans in gigantic breeding farms. Only Neo has the power to reverse hundreds of years of artificial intelligence domination in a post-apocalyptic world.
We should discuss why we chose the film.
Yep.
I think you put it on your list.
Yeah, I did. I just felt this film had a lot of overt spiritual themes throughout the film and thought it would be just a matter of time before we watched it or somebody asked us to do this film. So I thought I'd put it on my list. And so we are doing it today.
Yeah, I love sci-fi and I don't think I had seen it in 20 years. So I was excited to revisit it and dive in.
So at the beginning of the film, we have Neo who is looking for answers on the internet like we all do. And he is... I don't know exactly how this worked in the late 90s anymore because I wasn't really a computer hacker, but it looks like he's like in chat rooms or in some sort of weird, I don't know, like that black screen that you have as a computer developer.
I'm a technical technician.
Yeah.
Sophisticated stuff.
So he's in this and he seems to be communicating with what he thought were just other hackers, one named Morpheus. And Morpheus gives him some fairly blatant signs and says, hey, there's going to be a knock at the door and you must answer it and then make sure to follow the bunny. And Neo is like, what's going on? What are they talking about? And then all of a sudden there are knocks at the door and he opens the door to some people that he doesn't even know. Or did he know them? I don't remember now.
Yeah, it was like a drug deal or something, wasn't it?
Something weird. And
it was like not a drug deal. He was selling them like a virus.
Oh, yeah, that's like right.
A computer virus.
And so he is confused by what's going on, but then notices the tattoo that's on the woman is a bunny and realizes he needs to follow her. And by doing so, he gets taken to a club where he meets Trinity. And then Trinity starts the process of opening his eyes to the quote real existence.
Signs from God.
Well, so that's kind of my question to you. So to me, there were some blatant signs that he had to become aware of while he was talking with Morpheus. And I know that we've had past conversations about the universe and God. And based on those understandings, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you feel that the universe is not a relational divine being, but is more of just an existence that we all eventually become part of. Whereas I believe that God is a relational divine being that wants to be in community with us. You always like to say that I humanize God that way, and I don't necessarily think a divine being is necessarily human.
Human, yeah.
It could be anything. And I leave myself open to that. But to me, what I thought was interesting is there are these blatant signs that he's getting and he follows them. And I feel like I have that a lot in my life. Like I see I see things differently and kind of cock my head and like, okay, that was sort of weird. I don't believe that that was just by coincidence or just by universe. Like somebody is giving me a message. And so I wanted to...
I already want to ask you questions.
Yeah, but this is my question to you.
I'll hold back.
So have you ever felt that you have seen blatant signs in your life, and how do you explain them away?
I feel like I want to say, yes, I've seen signs, but then if you were to immediately ask...
Which ones?
An example or something, yeah. There aren't major ones that come to mind, which is, I know, very different than your life. Like,
yeah.
And I don't discount quote-unquote miracles or quote-unquote meaning behind coincidences. Like, I don't think brushing off a coincidence as just matter of fact is appropriate, because I still think it's quite a miraculous thing. I mean, we're, especially even if you just think about our physical limitations in our physical world, we're still a world of 8, 9, whatever it is, billion people. And for us to run into people from our previous, you know, from decades ago, come across their past or strange things like that, I don't write off coincidences at all. I do think they're a very blessed thing that we should appreciate. Now, is that a divine being doing that? Well, kind of. But it's just that we differentiate, I think, in terms of what our God is and our definition of God and what the source of that God is, right? So for me, as you said, the universe is sort of this amazing entity that we don't fully understand. And I'm sure that it causes quote unquote coincidences or signs for certain reasons. Now, are signs sending me on a certain path? I don't know. I think that might be a little far-fetched. I could see signs being there to influence decision or give you more confirmation, maybe, or like an immediate path, but to chain signs together and believe that there's this divine plan for me, that I don't buy into that part of it.
Why?
I just think the universe is just way too chaotic, and because I don't believe that there's like a personified God in the afterlife looking after me, why would there be a specific path for me to go on versus any other? That sort of takes out the free will and the fun of some of the decision making, doesn't it?
No. Well, first of all, I think it's interesting that you say the universe is chaotic. What do you mean by that?
Everything around us, down to the deepest level, is born out of quantum physics. And quantum physics, as you study them, is quite a chaotic space, but it's organized chaos. So it's chaotic in the sense that we define it because we don't understand everything that's happening at that level. It's almost a very human containing word for me to use, because ideally when we die, or if we reach enlightenment, or we are part of the consciousness, if I start relating it to Matrix a little bit, then maybe we do gain an understanding of how all of that orchestration works. But from my vantage point, you know, as a tiny speck in this massive universe, it does seem quite chaotic. Chaotic, yet somehow barely balanced, so we're surviving.
Well, but who would be organizing it? Or how would it be organized?
Don't you think it could be organized by a collective, an unconscious collective, like an energy?
How would energy organize something as vast as the universe?
The universe is made of energy. I mean, it's made of subatomic particles and...
Yeah, but to organize...
I mean, that is where we differ. The other extreme is that you think that one God or one entity or being can be just as powerful as what I think the entire universe can be collectively. I don't see that as very much different.
Well, okay, maybe not, but I'm just thinking like planets and stars are all traveling at different speeds. Even looking at like the Earth has to be traveling at just the right speed.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Just
by
the same distance.
Somewhat chaotic yet balanced. All that stuff is so well orchestrated to a point where we don't fully understand all of it.
But I think that's why I would believe there's somebody guiding that, because to me, there's no chaos. It's actually extremely balanced and extremely organized. Like, it has to be just so.
I personally don't feel comforted by that idea that there's, you know, one omnipotent present that orchestrates it all. I actually feel even better about the fact that God is even bigger than that, because God is everything and God actually includes us too, and that we could be a part of it. You know, if we can tap into that, if we can swallow the red pill.
I don't think I feel better either way. I don't think it's like a feeling of like goodness that I feel. I think logically,
it's just what draws you there. Yeah. And you want to understand why I don't get drawn in that same direction. And that's
actually not necessarily. I just don't know if I feel like it makes sense. Like, I don't see how something can be chaotically organized, but not organized by anybody. It's organized by everything that somehow has this energy. Like, I don't think there, to me, it doesn't feel like there's any sense of logic, which I guess brings to the point that it is chaotic.
I think that's because you like things to be very much in control.
Maybe. But I like spontaneousness as well.
Sure.
And I...
Within limits.
I don't know. That's more into my second question. We'll get into the limit thing.
Okay.
Going back to blatant signs, I guess what I'm gathering from what you're saying then is there could potentially be signs from the universe, which is a mass of everybody's energy that might give you a sign, but isn't actually connected to any other signs. It's just for that particular single solitary instance.
Yeah, and I don't even necessarily think there's a single purpose behind it. It's really like blips. So signs could be, let's use deja vu as an example. It's a very like simple one. If I experience that, it could be probably is this random act of having two existing realities collide for a brief moment. And I'm for a millisecond tapping in to a bigger presence than what I normally experience. And I think that that sort of relates to how you feel like for a brief moment there, you're totally open to receiving a message from God. And I feel very much the same way. I just, like I said, do we just have a slightly different or maybe very big different, I don't know, definition or just thought of what God is. But I still appreciate those signs. I just don't think that they're an outside force driving me toward a certain path.
Okay.
But I think they're so cool. It's almost like dreams, like you're tapping into the dream space and then you get to interpret that and wonder about it. And I think that's kind of what life is about, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if it has, I think so, yes, because I think there's meaning behind it and I think it's guiding me into a direction. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what it does for you. Like, why would this happen if there really isn't anything behind it? Like, it seems like kind of a waste to me.
I'm very sorry that you feel that way.
Well, just I don't. You feel that way.
I don't think any of it's a waste, but I've been wrong before.
Oh, deja vu.
What did you just say?
Nothing, just had a little deja vu.
What did you see? What happened?
A black cat went past us, and then another that looked just like it.
Deja vu is usually a glitch in the matrix. It happens when they change something.
So I wanted to ask you, how do you know, do coincidences happen in your life? Let's start there.
I think yes. It depends on how much you believe, going back to your notion of control, how much I believe God is in control of my life. So is he controlling every second of it? And I actually really don't have much of a say because he already knows what's going to happen and how it's going to play out and whatever else. Or does he only intervene here and there when I'm losing my way and he needs to redirect my path? And I think it's more the latter. I don't think God is continuously controlling every action that I do. I think there's, as we were mentioning earlier, I think there's a plan for my life that I am living a purpose in this time period and in on this planet. And I think, A, that I ask for signs repeatedly and ask for God to communicate with me. I don't think it's just always an audible voice. I think a lot of that can be displayed more artistically in signs and in wonders. So I think there are times that God wants to reveal himself to me that way. But in other instances, it could be a coincidence that I ran into somebody from a different decade of my life that suddenly just reappeared.
Yeah.
It could just be like a fun reunion. I don't necessarily think that everything like that is necessarily God trying to orchestrate something. I think it could just be part of the fun of our existence on Earth, where sometimes things just end up making us feel like the world is very small.
I was just wondering really like how you would, in the moment, how you would tell.
Perceive something.
If something's a coincidence, like, having drinks with a friend of yours and saying a bird is going to land on a stone, and then
2 days later it happens.
So your friend's not there. You claim.
So in Christianity, there is something that we call the gifts of the Spirit. And when we become Christians, the Holy Spirit gives us certain gifts. One of those gifts is the gift of discernment, which is basically being able to identify when something is of God or something is not of God. So I think when I am sitting with a friend having drinks and say, you know, God can do anything, like make a bird land in this spot. And then several days later, I'm sitting outside in the same area and a bird lands in that exact spot, especially the bird. So if I was picturing a certain color and size of bird, and then that certain color and size of bird lands in the exact spot that I had pointed to me, that is a sign. Now, the fact that I couldn't pull out my camera and take pictures of said bird because said bird flew off before I was allowed to do it was disappointing.
That was a sign for me.
But that's up to you. Whether, like, for me, it's like, and I even had said that night, I don't know when this may happen. It may happen right now. It could happen in a few days. But the fact that it did happen while I was sitting with a different friend having a conversation, I thought, I don't know. It just felt like to me.
To me, that is a sign, but yeah. It wasn't necessarily a sign for me, even though that's what you originally intended it on the first night, which is kind of interesting. And so it's something to keep in mind that we impact the universe by observing it. And if I had been there, it's possible that not the same thing would have happened. It's also possible that I may have seen it differently. And it's also possible that I could have interpreted it many different ways as well.
Do you want to know what my interpretation of that incident was?
Sure.
That I did not have enough faith. And had I just believed, God would have sent the bird the moment that I said it.
And that's why you probably needed that sign, and you were given that sign, in my opinion, to yourself, but still.
Yeah. That was definitely a, you need to trust me more. That was what I felt like when I saw the bird land. I was like, I didn't trust him enough. I didn't put myself. Remember how we were talking about like how at some point, if I really wanted to, I could fly around the room if I just matured enough as a Christian. And that was a moment right there that I felt I was being taught a lesson of, I didn't really push myself out there when you were sitting in the backyard and I made that statement. I kind of made it very nonchalantly. I wasn't like, I want God to do that right now to prove to you that he's real and that he wants a personal relationship with you. And because I didn't take that leap of faith, it didn't happen, but God showed me later, I would have done it. That's how I interpret it.
Well, for that, I mean, that example alone, like whether I agree with the full sentiment or not, how can I not say that that's an important part of life right there? And so back to your question, I think signs are significant, but they're different every time.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
I actually love some of the quotes from this movie, despite not actually enjoying the movie that much. But so my question is kind of more of a challenge for you. Can you, even though you may not agree with the entirety of the sentiment, can I challenge you to put yourself, in a Christian's shoes that also believes this statement?
I do believe that statement. However, I believe that statement pre being a Christian. So this is how I believe everybody is born, that everybody is born a slave to their bondage, to their sin, and in their own personal prison. And when you become a Christian, you're freed of that. That's the whole point of Christ. He has saved us from that.
Yeah, I thought this would be a little more challenging because forget like the dramatics of the movie, but he describes the Matrix as if it is our real life. So if we assume that our real life is Matrix-like and it was created by some creator, is that creator deceiving us
No.
By putting it in a, what they call in this movie, a fake world. Like, are we living in a fake world? As, you know, I don't want to get like into the experiment or trial debate, but is it sort of fake?
I think that, let's just take love, for instance. So I think there is real love, and I think there is counterfeit love. Counterfeit love is what the quote, quote, world teaches, or how I would also say the adversary. So I think that there is God, but that there is also the adversary, or Satan, or the devil, or however you want to name him. And I think his job is promoting the false or the counterfeit versions of everything that God created for us to enjoy. And I think that those who don't become a Christian yet, so you don't identify as somebody who has accepted Christ in his life, I think you live in a lot of counterfeit experiences. And so that would resonate a little bit more with you. Whereas I can see through that and be like, no, it's not the way it was ever designed to be. Like, this is wrong and this is not the truth. And I know that probably sounds really arrogant that I would be able to see that and you can't or whatever. But that, I think, is part of becoming a Christian. It does open your eyes, similar to how when Neo finally accepts it and swallows the red pill and is now open to the truth and wakes up in that gooey bath of mush with all the things attached to him, and he starts to see the world for how it really is.
Heaven.
Now, he sees a very gloomy and disturbing. No, it's not heaven. He's seeing the world for how it really is.
I know. And I told you immediately after we watched this, I was like, I hope you don't think that that's what my like thought process of what the afterlife is like.
Oh my goodness. I hope. No, because he's not in the afterlife.
He's in the afterlife of his reality. And essentially, He lived in his matrix and he died there, right? He can't really go back in the same way anymore. And so that was a passing sort of.
Okay, I guess I would disagree there, because I think that's where, if I were to put this into Christian terms, that's when he became a Christian. And now his eyes are open to the reality of what life really looks like. And so it's him beginning to find the journey of what really is out there and how to overcome it, I guess, which is what he spends the rest of the movie doing. He's getting trained. Morpheus is then acting a bit like the Holy Spirit in his life. He's training him and teaching him and mentoring him to become everything that he needs to be. And that's the life of a Christian. We're dependent on being taught by the Holy Spirit. What is love? What is joy? What is peace? What is patience? How does that actually look in real life? And it looks a lot different than it does for people who haven't accepted that and don't have that real experience, that real connection to our divine creator.
Briefly, do you then relate to this movie, and did get like, would you give it a thumbs up for Christian, like relating it to Christianity, or did it miss the mark more than it met the mark?
Oh, that's a really good question. So the first time I saw this movie, everybody talked about how great it was. So I intentionally went in not wanting to like it. And so I had to like put that aside when we watched it this time. And so as I was watching it, because one of the things, this came out while I was in film school and I went through a Christian program. And so everybody was analyzing this film for all of the Christian connections that it makes, even though I don't know if that was necessarily what the Wachowskis were looking to do. I don't know if, I mean, they had to have somewhat been looking at the Christian faith, because there's so many parallels to it that it's hard to ignore. But something that you said when we finished watching it was, oh yeah, you could relate this to a lot of religions. And I agree with that. I think
And it does such a good job. Like, it nails, it's funny how when he describe, going back to that description of the Matrix, he starts to nail like what I would define as our world order, but then it really misses the mark on the deceit thing, because that involves conspiracy theory and all that, and I don't really go there. But the reason I asked you that is because now I want to watch The Matrix 2 with you and revisit the exact same question, because I don't know if you recall, and we shouldn't talk about Matrix 2 now, but
I don't remember the movie at all.
We got to put it on the list. But anyway.
What about you? What's your answer to this question?
I think we do live kind of in a fake world, and I think it's only fake in that it's constrained, and it's because, and again, I don't have the answers of why we're here, obviously, nobody does, but...
I wouldn't say nobody does. You don't.
No, nobody knows. Nobody knows why we're here, but what I'm trying to say, I guess, is it's almost like a prison, or it has a lot of boundaries to our full potential. And I think we kind of relate to that too. You think there's a lot more potential that could be unlocked even within our physical constraints of this human life. And I think it's probably a little more constrained, especially in our, as much as we're learning about how the world works, there's still so much we don't understand. And I wonder at what point we're going to hit a limitation or a ceiling on what the human brain can actually comprehend and understand and what it can't. So when I say, yes, we're living in a fake world, I think we're living in a world, a very constrained world in comparison to what actually exists within the universe. It's got a very interesting set of rules, and we've done a very interesting but so far thorough job of trying to understand our constraints physically, mentally, psychologically, monetarily even. It's very limiting. And yes, could we maybe break out of it with spirituality? Potentially, yeah. I think that's why I like exploring this space, is I think we can see beyond that deceit. Now, deceit's a bad word, like probably the wrong word though, because it's really, we're living in this world of rules, as I'm saying, like this, you know, I hate fake too, like this kind of pretend world. But I don't believe that someone's maliciously orchestrating any of it. So like the deception from an adversary or a higher god is not really present for me there. But yeah, in a way, you know, we are enslaved a bit, and we've got flaws as humans. You know, the reason we feel bondage is not all mental, but all created by us, right? Created by humans. And it's sort of ingrained into our psychology. And I hope that, you know, when we break free of all that, we wouldn't feel that kind of bondage. And so, yeah, I think we have similar sentiment. I guess it's just a matter of a difference in approach of how to break those barriers.
When the Matrix was first built, there was a man born inside who had the ability to change whatever he wanted, to remake the Matrix as he saw fit. It was he who freed the first of us, taught us the truth. After he died, the Oracle prophesied his return, and that his coming would hail the destruction of the Matrix, end the war, bring freedom to our people.
So Neo is frequently referenced as the One. He is the only one who can save humanity, which is clearly a parallel to Jesus, even though I would not relate Neo to Jesus based on their character types.
And his acting ability. Oof.
Yeah. So you've generally rejected a notion like this, saying that you don't need Jesus and that this isn't it, and that it's so limiting to feel like I need this or I would have to have something like that. So I want to know a couple things. Why is it so limiting to have a reality where there truly is someone who can save us all? And what is wrong with limits? And I guess maybe we should start with that. Like, what's wrong with limits in the first place? Like, why is that such a bad thing to you?
Yeah, this is a difference between us, and I'm glad you asked it, because I thought a lot about the, you know, they mentioned the Messiah. I think they mentioned that word in the movie, or at least I wrote down in my notes after. And just this whole idea of there being an individual man or woman is not inspiring to me like it is to you, I think. Don't let me put words in your mouth, but I feel like men are equal. Men and women are equal. And we're all kind of constrained by the same limitations. Now, could someone get more enlightened than someone else? Yes. But were they born that way and born divine or born pure and holier than everyone else? That I just can't, it doesn't do it for me.
But why? I know it doesn't do it for you, but I don't understand why.
Well, the answers to the universe and why we're here, I would hope, would come from something larger than a human's thoughts. Now, maybe that's me not giving enough credibility to the capacity of the human mind, but in this day and age right now, I have very little capacity to put any credence to any man or woman. So why?
If there's a divine being that created the universe, and one of the ways that divine being wanted to reach out to us was to send a person in the image of this divine being so that we could truly learn what life should look like if we were to have a physical representation of the divine being.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, But
I don't know if you do, though. That's where I'm trying to, because you're trying to say, like,
but why do you need to be, why do you need to have God dumb down himself and present himself in a likeness of your image? Because you couldn't accept God for who he was?
No, I think it's more tangible for us to see.
And I don't disagree that we, in order for us to comprehend some things, especially within our prison walls of this reality, we do need to have it relatable. And so if there was an outside orchestrator, that would be a great way to come in and influence us.
And but again, it's because this divine being, if they want relation with us, and we've already screwed it all up and we're going all in different directions, and here's a solitary example of what it could look like if we embellished love in all that we do, and we spoke truth and understood that there are no limitations to what we can do, that we are actually created to be limitless, then why is that?
Well, I would rather talk and have a relationship directly with that creator then.
You can't.
Instead of limiting myself to saying, oh, I can only have a relationship with that creator through this human that existed on Earth eons ago.
Okay. I think that's a fair statement. My rebuttal would be, going back to your fact that we can't comprehend the divine being or a divine being or the universe, as you more call it, there needs to be some sort of a bridge between us and that in order for us to fully grasp it. If we have a divine being that is pure love and pure goodness and pure peace, we unfortunately are not designed that way. We are we are born, back to your second question, we are born slaves to bondage and to sin. So we need some way to go from that existence to what is all good and all right. We probably couldn't exist in the light of that on our own. Now, can you have a personal relationship with God right now without Jesus? Maybe, but it wouldn't mean much. Like, you wouldn't get very far in it because you can't comprehend even the slightest bit of it. Like, you have to understand a little bit about the nature of what this divine being is. So it's through that example that we learn a little bit more about it that helps us recognize. So going back to, like, how do I recognize if there's a sign that is from God or not? It's building that relationship based off of what I've already seen in the life of Christ.
Sure.
And so it's a little bit easier for me to comprehend that. But what I want to know is, why is that so limiting?
Well, I think it's just kind of accepting your limitation. And I don't like to do that. Like, I don't want to accept that I can only be me, and that I can only live in one reality, and that I can only live in one timeline, and that I can only have a relationship with the creator through another human. To me, there's just kind of limiting constraints. I like to think that I go sleep at night, or I meditate, and I have the potential to be a part of that creation, to have a relationship with it so strongly because I can literally feel it through everything that I know is me.
I mean, I don't think that that's too far off of Christianity, actually.
No, I don't think they're far different either. I just think there are ways. I mean, you defined how I would be limited maybe in having a relationship with a Christian God. But if my viewpoint of God is different, and for those maybe that have more like Eastern philosophies, I think they would disagree that that's the only path for them to reach some sort of enlightenment or be part of collective conscious, or, you know, whatever their thought process may be.
But going back to number two, is it deceit? Is that type of enlightenment the true enlightenment, or is it a counterfeit experience that feels like it's enlightenment, but it's actually not?
Well, who am I to judge?
Exactly.
I'm not saying I'm enlightened.
I
certainly would not pass judgment on someone else that claimed that they did reach enlightenment. I don't think it's for me to.
But you pass judgment.
Way. I think from
pass judgment on people who claim Christianity is true and that they have a relationship with God.
Yeah, a little bit.
Interesting.
So, what did you think of her?
Of who?
The woman in the red dress. I designed her. She doesn't talk very much, but if you'd like to meet her, I can arrange a much more personalized meal.
The digital pimp hard at work.
I pay no attention to these hypocrites, Neo. To deny our own impulses is to deny the very thing that makes us human.
I know it's kind of a generic question, but pulling off the themes of this movie, what is human to you? Like, how do we define ourselves as human? And one great example that came up later was this idea of traitorism. And I wanted to know, is that a human trait? Like, is that found in other parts of the animal kingdom, which I would be fascinated to know? Are those impulses and our urges, is that part of the definition of what human is?
This, I think, goes back to the last question. I think humans are limited. I think that's what defines us. And so these impulses that we have definitely define us, because they show weaknesses or limitations that we have that we can't control. That is the difference between what makes us human, is I think humans have impulses, whereas I think animals have instincts.
So here's my thought process when I hear this quote. I'm first like really into it. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Those drives, that's humans. We should protect that. You know, we're these amazing biological creatures. Yeah. Then I start thinking more about, well, those urges that he's pointing out are not distinctly human impulses or urges. They are seen in other places. And so then I'm kind of altering the quote and I'm thinking, well, but we do as humans have unique flaws, meaning flaws that are uniquely human,
yeah,
and don't exist anywhere else. And that maybe helps define what a human is. But then I thought about that even more and I was like, well, but all of the unique flaws that we have that I can think of were actually created by humanity. I stink at holding a job, or I can't save any money. I stink at relationships, or whatever, you know, our flaws are born out of this limited sphere of knowledge that we have as our day-to-day life. So then I, thinking broader, I'm like, in the whole context of existence and in the, to relate to you and your like afterlife and in, you know, on the other side, like what is human when you're over there and you're describing what human is?
We're no longer humans.
What defines us? Well, if you're describing what human is back on Earth, you know, how do you differentiate us and what's so unique about us?
Again, I think it's just the limitation that we are not what we can be. It's that defined time and space and living within the boundaries that we either place ourselves in or we don't believe we can get out of. The only thing that I would say I find wrong with this statement is actually the portion of it saying to deny our own impulses is to deny the very thing that makes us human. I actually don't agree with the statement itself, because I think that denying our impulses can, it can make us better human beings in some ways. So if I have an impulse to constantly go out and purchase t-shirts, regardless of if I need them or not, if I deny myself that, I'm actually becoming a better person by not allowing myself to just spend money on something I don't actually need, but that I just impulsively want to do. Like I'm in a store and it's like, oh, I need that t-shirt and I purchase it, even though I don't actually need it. I want the t-shirt. And I think that denying those impulses, I think is actually a healthy dose of self-control. Like it's proving that we can control our impulses and that we have that ability.
Yeah, I guess I think I just struggle. That means a lot maybe in this life. Does it mean a whole lot after we're dead?
Probably not. Because we're not going to have those impulses. Yeah.
I know. But in this movie, you don't think it's death, but when he passes out of the Matrix life and sort of has a rebirth in his real life, to me, that is kind of like passing over. That happened to me, I'd be like revisiting my identity from top to bottom and wondering, you know, what are we trying to save here?
Interesting.
Have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system that they will fight to protect it.
All right.
Final thoughts.
Well, I didn't bash the movie too much like I did after we watched it. I was really disappointed. I was really excited to watch it because it was amazing sci-fi. I was, I think it was 99, right? Yeah, I was in film school when it came out, and the cinematography and the effects were obviously top-notch. Was excited to revisit it, but you know, about 2 hours in, I was like even writing notes that reminded me of why I haven't revisited it. It touches religion so well.
Yeah.
So I was a little torn, I guess. As much as I didn't enjoy the movie, it kind of nails some of my thoughts about the world in which we live being only one version of reality. I think that's it. It nails it there. it definitely falls short in other places, and it would take us all night to nitpick which things it got right and which things it got wrong. I don't need it to be 100% right, but I would have liked it to be a little more entertaining then and better acting.
I think I liked it better watching it this time than the first time I watched it in the theater in the late 90s. I think it was probably after all the analysis that I would hear people over the years go through with it, it was easier to see it. And so I would agree, they do a good job of talking about religion and different aspects of it, not just Christianity, but pulling in from various religions. And so there is a lot of thought-provoking content that's within the film. I just think it gets really blurred out by all the action sequences that have like cool cinematography. And I think you had made the comment after we watched it that the movie was trying to be cooler than it actually should be. Like, it takes away from the deepness of the film to have all the action, but they were probably thinking that's how they were going to get the crowds and to be able to even at least get us to start asking the deeper and bigger questions that the film presents. So overall, I would say I'm glad that we watched it again. And I think that, you know, even just this conversation was interesting to understand a little bit deeper. And I think what's great about these films is it does help to point to them and use them as an illustration for things, for questions that we have for each other. And so I think that there was some really valuable epiphanies just even in this call that's helped me understand a little bit better where you're coming from. And hopefully the same for me is that you've seen a little bit better where I'm coming from on some of this.
Agreed. Next up, Matrix 2.
We'll see.